Okay. TH Film World Peace 3. Well, I mean, I've been drafting that and playing with the idea, and I guess I already have material for it. So here's some conceptual continuation of that, because I think I did it before too. Yeah, what we have that could fit in it, sort it out, put it in some kind of order. And we got the Kennedy book, we got this and that, the colonialism, the Africa, the propaganda book there about the how to quiet things away, and so on. And we got the piles of videos I have collected now from where I can find quotes by experts, real ones. And tell the story. You know, here I am, beginning of 2025, and God knows where you are when you see this. And here we have the talking head talking from both angles, or all three angles. Yes, we've got three angles. And you know, when I sit in here and I look at the world out there, and yeah, what to say? Again, Cold War, Hot War. The environment. Are we humans gonna handle it this time? Well, you know, cultures, civilizations have risen and fallen, nothing new, and I guess even as they think, some will sit there and say, come on, just enjoy the party. You know, we see Titanic sinking. What are you talking like this? Negative. Just get in the right frequency and vibe, and or we just gotta kill the bad guys. And then we're all gonna be happy, the ones of us who remain. Because, yeah, I mean, I guess this is why I take the trouble of making this film and requesting, asking, humbly begging you to take the time to look at it. We can basically, if we shall believe the experts, destroy most of our human civilization, and I guess most of the animal civilization too, in a few hours by pushing some buttons. And if you don't believe me, then, you know, listen to these guys and those guys and put some clips in there. But we can also make peace. And if you're one of those who now say, you idealist, peace on earth, forget it. There will always be wars, and here comes another one, and we're all gonna die. Well, I lived long enough to see goodness in humans. I met so many people in different places of this world, from the east to the west, who are very nice and kind and humble, honest people. Not at all aggressive. And there is that what we call love. It exists in us. Yes, I could, and you probably too, tell story after story about such people I have met in my life and read about too. historical persons. And if we look at the wisdoms, you know, the most noble knowledge we find on this planet throughout history, they tell us, at least some and most, I would say, that yes, we are by nature good, bright, kind, loving. But we have slipped down into some selfish dreams. In that dark corner of the cosmos with the lust and anger and greed and fear and illusions. Did I say envy? That takes over our minds. So yeah, it starts in here. Where we sit, looking out. But I say, because I know it is true. That we can, yes, we, all of us, not the others, we humans can, and especially you who may listen to this and be in a power position, we can make peace. We can sober up. We can meet solve things. That's what diplomacy is for. So maybe simply start there. With the leaders talking to each other. And you know, let's go back to a point in time that looks very much like this. It's 1962. Like 63 years ago. When the Cold War was very close at getting hot, very hot, two superpowers possessing lots of very dirty, poisonous bombs. And you had two men, John F. Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev, one in America, one in Russia. One sitting in front of his home by the ocean in Florida with his family. Another one by the Black Sea, writing letters to each other, private secret letters smuggled in. First one came from Khrushchev. We hid the letter, 25 pages, in a newspaper, smuggled into John F. Kennedy. With his mail or something. And they were talking about how happy they were to live in such a beautiful place. But how there was that shadow of their nations. Being in the critical risk zone of engaging in a nuclear war. And how they both realized more and more, and told each other so, that they were losing their power. That they could only get so far holding back the warmongering generals of their countries. And they were even openly expressing their worries that the possibility that they may be overtaken by the military in their countries. So it was an incredibly sensitive situation, which I think still most people on the planet are not fully aware of. And Khrushchev, he wrote like this in his first letter to Kennedy. I'm thinking of the biblical story of the Noah Ark, and how it was said there that both the clean and the dirty were allowed on the Ark. Because it was meant to carry them all and save them. And so he said, it is for us. You might consider us dirty and yourselves clean, and we might consider ourselves clean and you dirty. But we are on that ark together that we have to lead now, safely. For everyone. Then the US suddenly launched an intercontinental missile. And some of the bomber B-52s suddenly changed their course towards the territory of the Soviet Union. It seemed at that point that the control was lost. And who knows? Well, the missile was unarmed, but still an incredibly serious provocation. Because how could anyone see from the other side whether it was armed or not, and with what? And that's where preemptive strikes are made. And this is what they discussed. That the greatest danger is if one side becomes convinced or gets enough many signs that the other side is about to attack, then they will decide to launch a preemptive strike, be the first ones. Now, at that time, John F. Kennedy had a meeting with his military staff, which he secretly recorded. And which is now available, you can find it online, where the top generals of the United States were pushing him strongly to launch an attack now, that very same day probably. President Kennedy remained quiet, silent. Simply silent. And no launch order was given or approved. He then sent that message through his brother Robert Kennedy, who spoke it, gave it to an ambassador, Soviet ambassador, that I cannot hold back much longer. And you probably can't either. At that time, in the last second, I think it's fair to say, President Khrushchev pulled back his ships with the nuclear missiles on their way to Cuba. But well, the reason they were on their way to Cuba, he explained, was that they were seriously afraid that the US would attack Cuba again, as they had done at the Bay of Pigs. And if you don't know what that is, well, here is a 30-second summary, but outside of that, you educate yourselves. And yes, he also mentioned the fact that the US had military missile, nuclear missile bases in Turkey. So we pull back our nuclear missiles and you pull back yours. Isn't that fair? But if we pull away our defense of Turkey, we are betraying them. Well, if we pull back our defense of Cuba, we're betraying Cuba. So yeah. And why I tell this story is that right now, last days of 24, many of us here on this planet hope that there will be talks of the same maturity as actually happened then between those two men. Privately, very nice. Don't mix in the press and the mob. But simply discuss what is the right and good an honest and wise, sustainable thing to do here. And maybe even, that the first good thing to do is to try to be friends. And whether you think the other one is dirty and yourself clean, well, we can be friends anyway, can't we? And if we humans can just learn that, at least not be enemies. Because others are different from us. Or maybe they're making more money than we do. Or maybe becoming more popular than we are. Again, it all starts from inside here. And if you think it's only the inside of the leaders that matters, you know, they need you to fight their wars, to work, to build up the society you are ruling and so on. So we, yes, all of us, matter and can say, yes, this that you are doing, we are following. But that we are not following. Because it is not right. But then someone says, well, sometimes war is inevitable. It's the only solution, and therefore is right. Well, if you get attacked, it is right to self-defend. If this country, this land where I'm living, or my family get attacked, I would do my best to defend. Of course. But if someone tells me to go to the other side of the world, invade a country, a sovereign nation, calling it defense of our freedom or whatever, then I would say, you know, BS on you. They are not attacking us. So what we are doing is not defense, it's attack. But we are defending that other country, the people of it, against their evil leader. Well, you know, anyone can say that. It would be, it's the simplest form of rättfärdigande, what is that? That you can do, translate that Swedish word. You're not a good husband, so I will defend your wife against you by killing you. Hurting you. We have to, and that's what happened there. Back in the 17th century. Have sovereign countries who, yes, have to follow international laws that they agreed upon, but not where one country elects themselves as the leader of the others, and the police and judge and the executioner. So we need to look at what's going on. A bit deeper, a bit more real. Each and every one of us, and I'd say this is our responsibility as citizens. And as Henry David Thoreau and Mr. Gandhi told us and showed us, if those who are the leaders, your leaders, don't behave the way a leader should behave, it's acting against what you are convinced is a good and right way to act, then your duty is not to follow. Disobedience. I think we should consider what the actual depth of that was.